Hello, friends. It's me, Jordan, reporting from Let's Dig Into That. Today, JT and I are excited to share a conversation that we didn't think was even possible.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking money, finances, with an actual asset expert, and the thrilling punchline, there's hope.
Yes.
There's support. We're going to share empowering, proactive opportunities to demystify the monies. I'm kind of pumped.
Me too. And our guest today has such a personal connection to their passion.
That's right. Like, Ed Vargo, guys, is the co-founder and CEO of Burning River Advisory Group and Enlighten Her, a community focused on financial mentorship for women. With over 20 years in financial services, Ed helps women navigate long-term financial planning for all life stages, including retirement, college, and transitions related to divorce or death. His dedication is personal, as JT mentioned, inspired by his mother's financial struggles after his own parents' divorce. Ed is committed to empowering women to competently manage their finances and avoid similar hardships. He's a member of the Financial Planning Association and the Society of Financial Service Professionals. Ed is married with five daughters.
Five daughters?
I cannot wait for you to get all the details of this. Whom he has raised to be financially empowered young women.
So without further ado, Love Ninjas, please welcome Ed Vargo. All right, everybody, our Love Ninjas, please welcome Ed Vargo to the podcast. Ed, thank you so much for being here. We are so excited you're here.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here, too.
Of course, I got to get started right away. You have a different approach to what you do, working with clients and helping people with their finances. But you have this word that every time I was reading about you, empower, it just kept coming up. I want to know more about why that became your passion and your avenue. Like, why is empowering, and particularly women, become your focus?
Yeah, well, how we got into this area of working predominantly with women really started from sort of my background. So just to give you a little background about me and my personal life and how it bleeds into the financial world and my professional life is that I'm the father of five daughters. And
five.
They're ages right between yeah, five. I know it always catches people a little bit, like, wow, that's a lot. It is a lot. And ages between 19 and 26 now. And so, you know, when what was really interesting was when they were all really young. So we had five kids who were 6 and a half and under. And so you can imagine if we were out and about, you know, my wife and I are out about with this gaggle of girls running around, you know, go to a mall or to a park, and there's just chaos around you swirling all the time. Yeah. So I remember those days a little more fondly than when I was in them back, you know, it was a mad dash at that point. But so I think of it like, and how does that affect my life today and the trajectory of our business and how I think about the world? Well, that's sort of the best of times. So it's like the sort of this idea, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times, right? So that old Dickens novel. Mm-hmm. And I think about my girls being the best of times. This is what, if you're financially empowered, if you're capable, what could you do with that? How can it transcend your life or help you get more out of life? So that's one side of it. On the other side, the worst of times was really dealing with my mother or my mother's situation, what she was dealing with when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. So my parents got divorced when I was probably around 12. And that process, of course, takes a while. Mm-hmm. And so we were embroiled in that sort of divorcing process, probably from age 9 to 12. And so my mom was an immigrant from South Korea. My father was stationed in South Korea during Vietnam, met her over there. They got married. My older brother was born in South Korea. And, you know, she came to the United States. But when coming to the United States, it was a big language barrier. She's never, even to this day, has never been able to read the language, write the language, has never driven a car. And so imagine being a fairly young mother with four kids, and then the relationship didn't work out and they were getting divorced, and she really didn't understand the divorce process. And there was certainly a language barrier, and you know how divorce goes. I don't think my dad was stepping up to the plate to tell her everything that was involved in that. Sure. So not to talk badly about the departed, but that's how it goes, you know, in those relationships. And so ultimately, what happened was that she had to give up custody of us four kids. She thought that was the best thing for her and for us, quite frankly, not really for her, but for us. Mm-hmm. She felt like she couldn't provide for us economically. She didn't have a job, or didn't have a steady paycheck, and was just trying to survive and make do, much less take care of four kids. And so, again, not understanding alimony rules and maybe being able to get some dollars, some economic empowerments or dollars of her own to take care of us or at least share custody, she felt that she had no other option but to give up custody of us four kids. And so my advocacy for women really comes and flows from that. Like I feel a bit like she was, and I'm only guessing at this, but there's enough stories to go around, that she was taken advantage of, or her situation, the circumstances were certainly not to her advantage. And so she was left with, well, whatever she was left with, which was unfortunately giving up us four custody. So it wasn't just impacting her, but of course impacted us too, us four kids, trying to think about our relationship with our mother. So that's a long answer to your
It's
Oh
great.
my goodness. I mean, what an incredible story, though. The emotional weight of, yeah, that upbringing, witnessing that firsthand. My heart is just, I'm holding your mom in my heart right now. Because that's unbelievable. And it's so tough to talk about money. And this is a very extreme case of, yeah, the language barrier and the divorce process and all of that. But how do we, can you help us, please, try to disconnect that emotional response from money, so we can just make it easier to talk about, like, how did you cross that bridge from your mom then to, yeah, those girls that you've got in your house?
Yeah, I think it's interesting when, of course, I'm in the world of finance. So talking about money is naturally what I do. So the barriers that others might have around talking to their family members, their kids, their spouses, I don't have that barrier simply because I'm around money all the time. It's normalized for me. However, how do we take that mindset and then pass it down to those around us? And I think that idea of normalizing the conversation around money is just that. Just have the conversation. They don't have to be like financial advisor conversations, right? What I mean by that is you don't have to have a lot of technical financial knowledge to talk about money. As a matter of fact, I mean, my kids, they're older now, so I have a little bit more of technical conversations with them, but hardly ever did we ever have any conversation about per se money. We talked about money in front of them. We openly discussed or bantered about money decisions in front of our kids. And we never talked about money in a negative way in front of our kids, but we never shied away from that conversation. And it's okay to, if you feel like it's not, you're not comfortable in sharing how much money you make with your children. Fair enough. You don't necessarily have to share those details. But if you don't talk about money, you're not normalizing that conversation. And they're not having that conversation anywhere else.
Exactly. Not at school. Yeah.
No.
Home economics. I don't know if it's too soon to go there, but I'm thinking that might be under delivering. Big fan of education. And so, yeah, where are we learning this if not at the kitchen table and hearing families
Well,
talk about
and
it?
it's such an emotional conversation. Like Jordan and I, we still struggle with the money talk of
We're
being,
so excited to chat with Ed, and we got tense this morning.
yeah,
I'll say
we talk about
it.
everything, but every time we bring up money, there's this extra tension, and it's just a sense of uncomfortableness. And I don't know if our society puts a lot of value on how much money you make and how you value yourself, but the emotional aspect of what goes into these conversations, you think just having the conversation and making it approachable can
Normalizing
be
this.
the solution.
Well, it's certainly a big part of it, especially with kids. So it's very different when you're talking about two adults coming together, like you two talking about money is very different. The context of that conversation is very different. And the reason for this is, and you both said this up to this point, a couple of times now, that money's emotional, right?
Yes.
You bring emotion into the conversation, but money in and of itself isn't emotional, is it? I mean, it's an inert object. We bring the emotion to it. And we bring the emotion to it because we have a history with money. We all have a history with money. How you grew up around money and the belief systems, or at least the way it was talked about, value systems were passed down that were infused by money. You carry with that with you today. And so oftentimes what happens with two adults, right? So you come together in your life, you decide to spend your life together, or at least whatever that is. Then you get into the money conversation if you talk about it at all, which a lot of people don't, but it's going to be unlikely that you both come at it from the exact same place. Because you probably have different histories, different experiences with money. And if your experiences are far apart, then that gap is pretty far apart. And your values and how you tie your values to money might be far apart. And again, your perspective around money. Again, imagine somebody who came from a very well-to-do family and someone who struggled her whole life, his or
Right.
her life, right? And you're looking at money from two very different lenses. And you might have the same goals in mind, but the emotions around the money and how you think about money, very, very different. And so fostering the conversation isn't enough. It certainly is the most important starting point. But with kids, the thing about kids is they don't have emotions around money. They don't know any better. So if you could get to them early, if you could start to infuse or at least give them some guidance and some context and perspective around money, you have a chance of sort of building that value system and helping them build the right mindset around money right from the start. Of course, if you have a bad mindset around money, I guess you'll infuse a bad mindset around money, right? So as parents, now you hope, and I'm making an assumption here, that the parents are trying to do the right thing and trying to instill good values when it comes to money and a good context and perspective from which to view the world. But if you can do that earlier in life, a huge leg up for your kids. And that's why, in fact, you know, Burning River, you mentioned Burning River, or maybe you didn't, but that's my wealth management business. But we
Yes.
started a sister company called Enlighten Her, which is a financial coaching and education company for women, because, well, the way we engage with the public is very different. With a company like Burning River, we might be able to only work with a couple hundred households. So it's more for someone who's made their wealth, they've made their money, they want to make sure they're holding on to it, being smart with it. So they're at a more advanced stage. But at best, we might be able to work with a couple hundred households. That's not that many. And so we created this other organization, which is, I would say, more, I wouldn't say it's philanthropic, but it's more from an advocacy lens, where we're trying to get the word out to a larger audience, whether you're starting out, starting over, just getting going. How do you build the right mindset around money?
Right.
How do you get engaged with it at the earliest stages, whether you're a mom talking to your daughter or son, or a father talking to your sons, or vice versa, or just doing it for yourself? How do you get this thing going?
Right. You don't have to wait until it's blown up and you are at that restart and things have fallen apart. You do offer services because I loved on the Enlighten Her how it's using it as a tool to build the life you want, as opposed to how do I just get a grip? How do I survive this money? Yeah, management. So I think that's so there's, yeah, what's your age range then from Enlighten Her? Your youngest daughter or son, your youngest client that's hearing this great information to your
Well,
eldest?
yeah, from our perspective, we think about it from that young woman who's in her first real job, right? If you can get to that person, that really was the genesis of the idea for me. It was like I looked at my kids and how they think about money. Again, my youngest is now 19 and the oldest is 26, so pretty young in the grand scheme of things. And I looked at them and how they think about money, how they talk about money. And then I looked at and compared that to their peer group and listening to those conversations, because our house is like the gathering house. So I hear all this chatter about money, and they do want to talk about the girlfriends. And my kids tell me, like, we want to know about money. We just don't know how to find that information. They have no idea
Right.
where to go get it. They're not having these conversations with their parents. And so from the earliest ages, right out of, you know, first real job all the way on up for as long as you're around, that's really what we think about from an Enlighten Her. It really is. It's never too late, and it's almost never too early to get started, at least thinking about things the right way.
Exactly right. And I feel that the women do probably the chatter. I love that your household is the hub. That just brings me so much joy. And I feel that our interpersonal relationships, we might talk about it more as like JT kind of brings that perspective of my value is so tied into my paycheck, perhaps on how I'm perceived, you know, with my peers in that context, that I think, yeah, it's where do we get that information? And so I love that the age group of let's not wait till it is where we're like, oh, shoulda, coulda, woulda, that 5 years ago, you know.
Well, and it also sets up folks as you make these big life changes, like marriage. I think about when you get someone in their first job and then you approach this big life event of marriage and how you're going to handle it financially. I think the biggest question that most people run into is, how do you handle your finances in a marriage? Is it,
To
do you keep
combine
them
or
separate?
not
Do you
combine.
combine? Do you have advice for that? Or what would you tell your girls if they're entering that stage of their life? Well, that's talking to my girls might be a little different than when I tell the general public.
Sure.
What I mean
Fair
by
enough.
that, obviously, I'd be a little more assertive with my kids, because we have a history around money, right? That's why it would be a different conversation. But that aside, if you're, a couple coming together and you're starting to, you're going to get married as an example, you need to have a conversation about money. Okay. It's like, well, how do you have that conversation about money? I think it's a matter of maybe just getting to the point of, are you comfortable talking about money? That's the first place I'd start. Are you okay
Okay.
with this discussion? And if neither of you or one of you is more comfortable than the other around money, it's important to acknowledge that, because the one who's less comfortable around it's probably not going to engage as much, might be more likely to just let it go and not engage, or is more prone to maybe getting steamrolled by the other party intentionally or not. So it's a really big conversation to get started. And then I think the best thing to do is just, even before you start talking about money, right? We can back into that conversation. Talk about values. What do you really value most? And you could say, forget it from the context of money. I was going to say, what do you value most in the context of money? But just think about what's most important to you. It might be, we want to provide, I don't want our kids to struggle as they go to college, because I struggled when I was in college. Okay, fair enough. That means, but most importantly, there is about providing a pathway for college. So education is important to you. So you start talking about that. You start talking about, how long do you want to work? Do you want to work forever? Do you want to stay at home and raise the kids? Do you want to take a break to raise the kids? Or what does that look like? What are your values around family and being at home or not at home? Because that's a huge discussion and a huge decision along the way. What's important to us? Is it important to have a really big home that our kids can like spread out in? Is it more important to have experiences than maybe a bigger house? So would we be willing to give up a larger home to be able to go travel more with the kids? Would we be willing to give up maybe a luxury, an automobile or a new car, to be able to educate our children? Right? So those are values-driven conversations. Money does tie into it, but you're not having a money conversation. You're trying to get on the same page with values first. What's really important to us as you start to look out on the future of your life, kind of like future casting, what's happening in my life in the future? Then you work backward from there. And the lens I would look at is to say, well, can we rank order these goals or these values? And if we had to give up one or the other, we're going to start to get a hierarchy here. And then you can work backward from there and say, do we have enough money to do all these things? If you do, great, do them all.
Where's
But
the
like most
wiggle
folks, you don't, right? Especially when you're younger.
room?
When you're young, you're
Yeah.
poor, you have student loan debt, you haven't made that much money because you don't have that much experience, et cetera, et cetera. And so chances are you're gonna have to make some compromises. It would be helpful to know what's most important to you. And so then you can look at the least important thing and say, that's the thing we're going to compromise first.
Are you starting out or starting over with your finances and feeling overwhelmed? At Enlighten Her, they believe financial coaching should be different, not condescending, not confusing, and definitely not built for someone else's life. Their money and life coaches get it. They'll meet you where you are, whether you're building from scratch, bouncing back after divorce, or simply ready to feel in control. Because your financial education shouldn't make you feel small, it should make you feel powerful. With Enlighten Her, you'll go from insecure to empowered, from unsure to unstoppable. Ready to take the first step? Visit enlightenher.com to learn more and grab your free guide. Starting out strong or starting over strong. Because when women understand money, we change everything.
I love your values first approach. That makes a lot of sense, to be able to prioritize what's important to you first, and then you look at what you can afford.
Because the compromise, you're right, the framework of reality is where JT and I obviously struggle of that, where, we want to just keep adding to that list of the big dreams. But yeah, that goal setting. I'm curious, is first date where we should just hash this out, like bring a 401k, print out, because it's such a beautiful reference to your relationship as a whole. What a great inspiration to not talk about money, but use it as the impetus to get to know your partner in that capacity with such clarity,
Right.
too. But are there some, I'm feeling like myths, money myths that have probably hornswoggled me for my four
Yeah.
decades here. Are there some money myths you can help us bust while we have you here?
Sure. And we do have a on the website. We again, our business is predominantly geared toward women and how women think around money. And so if my answers tend to skew toward the female perspective, well, there's why. But there are definitely plenty of money myths out there. And I think one is that if we talk about it's taboo to talk about money. And this is more prone, women are more prone to this than men by far. And it's a taboo, it's uncouth. It's not ladylike to talk about money or to want money or desire money or go after money. All of those negative connotations that we associate with money, huge myth, holds people back from engaging with money. And it becomes an easy out, by the way. I think it's easy to say, oh, I don't have to learn about money because it's uncouth to talk about money.
Yes,
And
that's
so we
correct.
tell ourselves these little stories to make our, I would call it, suboptimal behavior, to make that acceptable. Because if I'm being virtuous by saying it's really uncouth to talk about money and to make it an important area of my life, it gives me permission. I've given myself permission to not engage with money, to not learn about money, to give it up to somebody else. And that's what happens a lot in relationships, is that the woman tends to step back and the man steps forward. And that's a two-step approach. You know, instead of both being on the same level, the man steps forward, so he's ahead, and the woman steps back. Now she's two steps removed from the man. And in a divorce situation, if things go poorly, then there's a huge gap between the knowledge that the man has and the knowledge that the woman has. My mom was in that situation,
Yeah.
in her case, right? And that happens a lot today still. I mean, not to that extreme, I don't think, but it happens a lot, even in households where the woman makes more than the man, where the woman steps back on the big ticket financial decisions and the man steps forward. And I think that is, and things harmful in the worst cases, in those, so divorce cases. But it can be harmful just in general because there's the ability or the inability to be an active participant in those big ticket decisions, which have an impact on the decision making of your life. Again, like going after engaging in life in the way you want to engage with it. So as an example, I've seen this a lot where a widow will look at her accounts and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe we had all this money. I've been told for the last 25 years of my
Been
life by
skimping,
women,
yes.
right, that we can't afford it. We can't afford it. Now, and you have plenty of
In
money.
the
So,
dark, completely.
right. So this wasn't a case where there was no money, there was financial infidelity or anything like that. No, just the opposite. It was too much money and not enough living. And there's resentment that happens after that. The wife, the widow in that case, resents her husband because she's like, I've been living like this. We've been living like this, like
Right.
paupers for all these years. And now that I know this money's available, I can't spend it with the person I want to spend the most of my time with. So that's a very difficult realization to come to. And it could have all been avoided if there were real conversations had at the table.
That communication, because it is like having the talk, you know, getting that value assessment and kind of seeing where we can wiggle and goal setting for the future planning and whatnot. It is like, when do you revisit that conversation? Because I feel like as a couple, as a family, where it's like, okay, we're good. And then at some point, you know, we had it once because it was uncomfortable and we powered through. And then it can, because this poor widow, you know, sitting on this pile of money and missing the one that she wants to spend it on, you know, that's so terrible. So how often, in your professional opinion, should we step back in and revisit?
Right. Well, I think we should be engaging with our money on a regular basis, not periodically. So when I say what is a regular basis, what does that mean? It's a bit of a personal choice, but I think what happens is we get so wrapped up in the day-to-day, or we don't like looking at our money stuff. It's not the most enjoyable thing. Again, particularly for women, women tend to have a larger aversion to the money stuff than men do. And there's a lot of reasons for that, which we won't necessarily get into right now. But if I were, the way I think about it is certainly once a year, you want to do a restatement of values, so to speak. That sounds very sterile. I don't mean to say it in that way, but very corporate restatement of values.
You put it on the calendar.
Yeah, no, it's a great time at New Year's, you know, on New Year's resolutions is just to go back and look at your list. It shouldn't be a very long list. Just revisit your list, have coffee one morning or late at night, and just start talking about your life, what the next year is looking like. Are these things still important to us? It doesn't have to be a long, drawn out conversation. Have our values changed at all over the year? Because values can sometimes shift and morph based upon circumstances. Are we in a different position financially today than we were a year ago? So we should be making different financial decisions accordingly. I think that would be an easy one. Once a year, at for New Year's, sort of New Year's resolutions. And I like doing like a mid-year resolution just in general. Because what happens is like you make these New Year's resolutions, and then if you're like most folks, by March, a lot of them have gone to the wayside or we kind of forgot about them. It's good to do a reset at the middle of the year and just say, hey, how are we doing on these things? And just make it a normal part of the process. So around the 4th of July, you have some time off. Hey, let's grab coffee. Let's go grab dinner. Let's look at these resolutions. Even if you just did it for yourself, I think it's a smart thing to do. But from a money value standpoint, minimum of once a year, I like doing a reset or a revisit at the middle part of the year.
I love that. And then for your daughters and their age group, I just am so in five. Still, he said five daughters, guys. Blown away. My mom has seven sisters, so I shouldn't be
My
too
gosh.
shocked. Yeah, she's one of 11. And so, however, what is the advice for that? Because I just love that age. It feels like, the horizon is just limitless and so many options. What is the best advice? What can we do right, male, female, regardless at that age, that early
Yeah.
20s, first job?
To start on the right financial mindset, how do we start at the right
A
place?
couple things we could do right.
Fundamentally, I think that kids need to have access to their own money early. So I don't know if, of an exact age. It could be 12 years old. It could be that young where you're basically saying, hey, I'm not giving you allowance. Not that I'm anti-allowance, but I like the idea of right off the bat, if somebody were to ask me, where does money come from? If my kids were to ask me, where does money come from? I would simply say, from work. You go to work for it. Or if you are an entrepreneur and you have a rental real estate business, you might say from rental real estate. That's where money comes from, or from investments. Whatever your lens is, but for most of us, it's probably from work. We get it from work. And so if a kid wants money, I'd say, well, you can get money. You're 12 years old, you can make your own money. Just go to work for it. And they're gonna say, well, what can I do? It's like, well, and how I think about in our household, we had like this spreadsheet of like chores, because everybody had to do their own household chores. We really need a grid to keep track of everybody and what they're doing with five of them. But for those things that you don't get paid to do that, this is for the household, this is like for the greater good. And so as being a part of the Vargo family, this is what you need to do as giving back to your family. However, if I needed them to do something or I wanted them to do something for me personally, let's say, I don't know, clean my car, wash my car is a great example, simple thing, then I would want to incent the right behavior and say, hey, you want to make 20 bucks? Go wash my car. I don't care how good a job they did or whatever. The younger they are, the less I cared about the work that they were doing and more associating, you get money for work. You get money for work. And also, when they work for it, they know they have to give up their time for that money. And so if they gave up their time or they had to work really hard for it, they're less likely to blow their money, right? Because then you can step in and say, hey, you have 60 bucks saved up. You want to go get a shirt for yourself that's above and beyond what mom and dad normally, pay for. Well, it costs 40 bucks. So you can go do that. It's your money. But then you can say, just think about how long it took you to make that 60 bucks or that $40 you want to spend. You're gonna have 20 bucks left, right? So you can have a conversation about money. So it's always a trade-off. I decide to spend $40 here. I can't spend it over there. So for them, it's understanding, look, I mean, yeah, you can buy this shirt. You already have enough shirts though. You don't need this shirt, but if your friends want to go out to the movies next week and you only have 20 bucks and it costs you 30 bucks of whatever you want to do, it costs you more than you have. Is that worth it? So now they have context from which to make those decisions, but they can't do that if they don't have their own money. It doesn't work nearly as well if they don't have their own money.
Wow.
Right, that empowerment piece is clutch to. You're setting a healthy perspective example, and then they're deciding how to value what, how they want to spend that time has an opportunity cost. And
Yeah, I wish I had this sort of training. I am not someone who I would say is great with money. So my question to you is, when you don't have these habits established, how do you get away from these negative behavioral scripts and things that you've done wrong and really change your patterns?
The meaningless spending kind
yeah,
of?
Yeah. Like, okay. How do you really start to determine what is meaningful spending versus something that's not serving you?
Well, it's a big question, right?
Yeah.
Because you really need to get the information in a way that resonates with you. So, and you got to find those people. There's so much conversation about money out there, right? You can just Google, teach me about money, and you're going to get a million hits. There's so much. So it's hard because money is a ubiquitous topic. Every year, New Year's resolutions is about money and health. Every mm-hmm. single year, those are the biggest hits, searches. And so it's not a matter of finding information. It's finding information that resonates with you.
Okay.
And the things we're talking about are harder to come by because these are psychological, behavioral things. And you don't hear most financial professionals, most people in my shoes as a financial advisor aren't talking about these things. They're talking about the technical side of finance, which is very important, but it doesn't really work or apply for someone who's just starting out or trying to build or make better habits. And so if you can't just hire a financial advisor to help do this stuff for you or to be there with you because it's too expensive to do that, where are you going to find the information? Well, it's hard. It's one of the reasons we started Enlighten Her. We're trying to bring this message out to the masses. And maybe the searches that you end up doing, you can do a different type of search in Google or in AI these days. You could say behavioral right. finance, making better financial decisions, making, you know, finding a better financial coach or something like that. You got to be careful with the financial coaches of the world. And this is not meant to be disparaging, but what's happened in the world of, you probably see this in your neck of the woods, anybody with a camera and a microphone can become an expert.
Yes.
Which is a wonderful thing in so many ways. It opens up so many doors, but it also opens up so many doors for those who have a story, their own story, to come out and say, I got out of debt. Mm-hmm. I paid off $30,000 in 6 months or whatever it is. And again, I'm not trying to downplay this, maybe a little bit, but
be wary. Be wary is fair.
Right, right. Because those folks are coming out and saying they're experts. And their experience, while meaningful to them, may not apply to a lot of others. And they don't have enough training and experience across the board of working with different types of people. And so the problem with, and that's, it's good because they're bringing awareness and a voice and their marketing's good. And it's good because we need, you know, this sort of edutainment, you know, education, but entertainment at the same time. Finance doesn't really work that way. I mean, how many entertaining financial sites are there? Can you name any?
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point. So, I mean, so on one hand, it's good because those folks are bringing awareness, but those with the credentials who are in the field doing the work for a lot of years, they're not doing that. Like most of my peer group, most of the other wealth managers out there, 25 years of experience, CFP, all the bit, right? All the credentials who know what they're talking about and can back it up. They're not out talking to the masses. They're really not, because they're too busy running their businesses. Mm-hmm. And it make you, you know, Enlighten Her. We've been doing this for a little while now. Doesn't make any money, right?
Mm-hmm.
We hope at some point, you know, it breaks even, and we do good work. So my point is just that's a big barrier to entry for those with credentials. And so it is hard, you know, to your point, JT, how do I find this information? If you could find a few folks, just a few, one, two, three, for lack of a word, experts, or just people you whose message resonates with you, follow them, but don't take their word as gospel.
Second opinion, doctor, medical moment.
Just like trust but verify, that old Ronald Reagan quote, you know, trust mm-hmm. but verify. And over time, you give yourself enough time with them. And we tell this to our clients too. It's like, don't take my word for it. You know, I think about it, I've got to earn your trust. I have to earn your respect. And every interaction we have is I'm making a deposit into the trust bucket, mm-hmm. right? I'm depositing into this trust bucket. And once I get that trust bucket filled, then the relationship blossoms, because you don't have to double check me. You don't feel like you've got to be prudent, and you can trust me at this point because we've been together enough and I've earned that right. And we can be a little too trusting on social media and other, just because somebody says they're an expert. So find the right sources and then put it in the practice, but you can go slow. You don't have to learn this stuff overnight. Sure.
Right,
Yeah.
because it is so conflicting that I love the edutainment where it is helping to normalize, because it was so just that defeating where it's like, I'm under it, the money has won, there's no way out, and there was none of that available. And so to at least be like, huh, they might not be doing it right, but I'm intrigued to do a little more digging to figure out how. And so the fact that, yeah, there is a little Me Too moment of like, we've all been in a, most of us, I should say, have all been in that corner where, yeah, things get a little hairy for a moment. And so I do think, should we get on the fun? I
Let's
want to
do
know. I mean,
it.
we've been very serious. And so I do want to ask about your fun money, Ed, because I think how, yeah, what do you, just for fun? I know you've got this big family, but what do you spend your fun money on out of curiosity? And any influence over how you tried to set that value kind of momentum with your girls? Do you have any influence over their fun money? Probably not at this point.
Well, not directly, right? So we don't take direct control over their money. It's their money. They're empowered to spend their money however they want. And, as parents, our job, we always thought of this is how I thought of it. I thought that kids were just adults in training, right?
Yeah.
And so what that did for us, it put us in a position of like, think if you were a trainer and you were responsible for molding this individual, like a trainee. So you would walk them through the steps, you would guide them, show them, demonstrate, whatever it takes, because you know at some point you're going to let that person go out on their own. And you hope you've trained them enough so they can make the right decisions in the right way in the moments when you're not there. And that's our job as parents, right? We hope that we instill the right value system because when we're not there, which is going to be most of the time, that they do good things, they make good decisions. And if they make mistakes, which they inevitably will, that they deal with those mistakes the right way, head on, accept them, and then move forward and learn from it. And so when it comes to the fun side of things, we've always believed first out of necessity and then out of just a true value decision that experiences over things. When we have all these
That.
kids, we didn't have that much money, right? We were kind of struggling like every other parent. And we didn't have a whole lot of money to go out and buy a bunch of stuff and to go to expensive places and restaurants and otherwise. And so we did a lot of stuff that was inexpensive for a large family. When you have a large family, you do learn to become frugal or savvy about how you spend money. So we did a lot of things together. So there's a bunch of museums in the Cleveland area. We're very fortunate. So we would buy a family membership. So one price gets all seven of us in, very economical, but that's doing something. We didn't buy something for them. We did something together. Doesn't cost anything to go on a hike, to go on a bike ride, to go swimming, right? So we're a very active outdoors family. And then when it comes to some things that cost money, we see a lot of movies together. So we're like a big movie family. So you go to a matinee. We would smuggle in like food and stuff like that, right? Because that
Oh,
stuff is
yeah,
really
absolutely.
expensive. Yeah, we did all those things, right? Kids, like, we're teaching them to be industrious, right?
There you go. I love it.
And then today, the way we carry that forward is we still prioritize experiences over things. As we've earned a greater level of affluence, we have more disposable cash. We've still maintained that same posture. So the things that we do are a little bit nicer now than they were then. We do a lot of travel together. We actually see a lot of concerts together as a family.
Oh,
So
that's
I don't know how
great.
many of our, no, I'm 52. I don't hear a lot of my kids' friends saying, oh, we went to this concert with our parents, but we're trying to keep the family together and we have to do things that they want to do, right? So we just do a lot of stuff together like that.
That's
And
great.
I'm kind of the family planner when it comes to those types of things. So
Nice.
concerts, travel, sporting events. I mean, we do a lot of things together. We were on a hike yesterday for Mother's Day, which again cost nothing. So,
That's wonderful.
love it.
We call that baller on a budget. That's what we
Baller on
say
a
in this.
budget. That's our house.
Get creative.
And again, I don't want to steer us away from fun, but this question's been living inside of me. Just thinking about our listeners, do you have any advice or like a one tip or just something significant for those who carry a lot of debt?
Well, I mean, debt is an emotional thing. It's
Sure
very
is.
hard. It's like, because debt, you can get into debt real fast and getting out real quick. The bad stuff can happen quickly. The good stuff takes time, right? I mean, I think we see that in all health-wise, you can get into bad health very quickly. Getting into good health takes a long time. Debt is definitely the same way. And so I think the one thing about that is that there are very few quick fixes, which can be defeating, but I think just acknowledging that and say, look, this is going to take me some time to figure this out, but you will, and it's worth
Right.
it. It is absolutely worth it to get good at this and get that under control, even if it takes years to get it done. But you have to have a plan, a real plan for doing so. And so the real plan means, well, identifying what got you into debt in the first place. What was the catalyst? Got to be brutally honest with yourself. People have a hard time doing this. They say things like, oh, well, we had medical expenses that came up, which might be true, and it might be part of, but if you had $2,000 in medical expenses and you have $18,000 of credit card debt, it's not the medical expenses that caused the problem. So we do
No.
that. We parse this out, and we sometimes are protected. We're trying to protect our ego, right? Because it's hard to look at ourselves and say, man, I really,
Messed up.
messed this up. Right. But don't have shame. Don't have embarrassment around it. Acknowledge it. Forget all those emotions. They're not helpful. It's just about here's where I'm at right now. This is my mentality in life in general. I have a don't look back mentality. Okay. I'll look back for a second to learn from the experience, and then it stays there. So there's no regret. None of those emotions weighing me down from making the next best decision, because that's all I'm focused on. What's the next best decision I can make? And if you can
Solution
take that
focused.
mentality into debt and saying, okay, I need to have a plan for this. I've looked back to say, how did I get here? What caused this? So I don't make that same mistake again. Now let's put this plan in place to try and get out of it. And it may take a little bit of technical know-how. There's tons of like financial or debt reduction calculators out there online. There's a bunch of different methods, from like the highest interest rate method to the snowball method. Look those up. I think that helps to identify having a plan, and then having an accountability partner, I think, is really, really important. And an accountability partner is somebody who understands you, understands what you're in, who you respect, who will tell you like it is, but with a healthy dose of empathy, but not too much empathy to where they allow your a bad pattern of behavior to persist. So that person's a special person.
Yeah, that's great
Yes,
advice, though,
that
because
is
you're
really
right. I'm
nice.
just lying to ourselves and then attaching that self-loathing with carrying around this debt as opposed to, yeah, putting it on the table and finding a wingman of support. That's
Yeah, our
huge.
podcast has a similar sort of sentiment. We call it only forward, as opposed to, don't look back. We say only forward because, again, solution focused is how you can. We're all about sort of getting rid of that shame and that embarrassment. So I'm so glad you brought that to light. I do want to bring it back to fun because we are running a little bit out of time. We sort of asked our end question of what you do with your fun money,
I couldn't resist.
and
I couldn't
you
resist.
answered with concerts with your girls. Gotta know, best concert you've seen recently.
Oh, good one.
Best concert. We took them all to see Bruce Springsteen.
Ooh, the mom. There you
So,
go. Wow.
leading up to that, they know some of his music, but they don't know a lot of it. So I put together a playlist on Spotify. So I was like, you gotta listen to this.
Perfect.
And then I was like, you guys have to see this man in concert. And it
What?
was, he lived, 3 hours, no opening act, start to finish. And the kids still talk about that
Delivered.
all the time. They talk about that
Wow.
kind, and they talk about him like that guy's crazy. He's ripping off his shirt, and he's ripped, and he's 70 years old, and 3 hours long. So
Yeah.
that
Good
one
parent.
immediately
That's
sticks in mind.
that's awesome. Did you know that they tried to give Bruce Springsteen a rest stop in New Jersey, and he turned it down and told them, "I'm born to run." That's a real story, by the way.
Is that right?
The rest
Wow.
stops are all named after, yeah,
After
famous
famous folks in New
musicians.
Jersey.
That's
Yeah.
right.
Well,
I have to thank you for the generational work that you've done of your childhood to how you have provided the world with these strong women that are going to go out and do good and have this financial education and not giving your girls that self-protective, it's going to be hard. And like, wow, that's really
yes,
amazing what
thank you
you've
for
done.
what you do.
Yep,
Well,
really
thank
appreciate
you. It's
it.
certainly a
Oh.
labor of love, I'll say that. Well,
Bye.
this has been truly special. Thank you so much for joining us, Ed. We really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Keep doing what you're doing, and we will find you on Enlighten Her.
Thank you. Thanks again for having me. I appreciate it.
If you enjoyed this conversation, it would mean the world to us if you had a second to share this episode or your favorite episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow on the homepage at letsdigintothat.com or wherever you find your podcast. Thank you, Love Ninjas.
The impact of your support is greater than you could ever imagine. Thank you, thank you, thank you.